Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds.
You boldly go where no man has gone before.
Engage.
Engage. Kirk Enterprise, Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure, history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
Hello, hello, hello. Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. I don't know what time you're listening to this, but I'm going with 2 o'clock. I think it's 2 o'clock wherever you are. Welcome to another episode of Engage. My name is Jordan Hoffman, and we got a great show for you today. It's still being August. We're about to roll into September. We've got the last of some pre-recorded interviews from the Star Trek Las Vegas convention from earlier this month. And we've got two fantastic interviews heading your way. We spoke with a woman by the name of Sarah Gatos from San Diego, California. And she, as you will soon learn, is one of the most important figures in the Star Trek mythos today. She is the Admiral. She is in charge of the Star Trek comic books in all forms. She is the woman behind all the creative aspects of that, keeping all the trains running, and she's a very interesting and specific job, and is perhaps more influential than you may think, at least in terms of the Kelvin timeline films. A lot of what we, some of the specifics that we love of about the third film especially, has kind of emerged from the world of the comics. So you're going to hear all about that with her, and also get a nice preview of things to come in Star Trek comics. So that is a nifty interview. And then we also spoke to Michael Dorn, to Worf, the mighty son of Moog from the House of Martok, a man that doesn't need much introduction. We kind of peeled him away. He was in the vendor's room. He was kind of sitting at his booth, and he was signing pictures of himself, and he was wondering when it was time for lunch. And I said, hey, Michael, because I had met him once before. I said, you want to come on Engage, the official Star Trek podcast? And his answer was, I want to have lunch. And I said, you can eat lunch while we talk. Great. So so he went and went into the other little room and did a little chat. In other news, my battery's about to die on this thing. Oh, God. All right, I better make this quick because I don't know what happens if the battery dies in the middle while I'm talking. Oh, Engage listeners. Ugh. All right, don't go anywhere. And we're back. Okay. You know, when I'm not in Deck 44, on Deck 44, and the next interview you hear on Engage, the official Star Trek podcast, was recorded on Deck 44, our main battle bridge. I use this little portable doohickey, which is fine, but it just is a monster with batteries. There's probably a way to plug it in to the wall, but I can't figure it out. But it just destroyed AA batteries. Like, nowadays, you know, like think of like your television remote control. How often do you change the AA batteries in that? Probably every 18 months, right? AA batteries seem to work a long time on the things that you need to use them for. But this thing it just destroys AA batteries. I don't know what's going on. So, it's always a mess. Anyway, so that's what's happening in the intermix chamber of my dilithium crystal container and containment unit. I was telling you that, yes, so we got Michael Dorn coming up in a minute, Sarah Gatos coming up in a minute. Great stuff that you were going to enjoy listening to. But before we get to that, I wanted to go back into the mailbag. You know, you can contact me whenever you wish here at Engage, the official Star Trek podcast, either through Facebook, facebook.com/engage, the official Star Trek podcast, or via Twitter at Jay Hoffman, which is me, H-O-F-F-M-A-N. You know, Hoffman's one of those last names you can spell four ways. Some people do it with two F's and two N's, which is the German way. And then you could do it with two F's and one N, which is how I do it. And then I guess in theory you could also do it with one F and one N, although I've actually never really seen that. Or one F and two N's, right? Did I get that all four? Well, there's four different ways. So I am H-O-F-F-M-A-N. All right, so make that happen, which is the most common way anyway. So, you know, you'll figure it out. We had a couple of interesting things in the mailbag this week that I wanted to bring up. You know, the most common thing I get, the most common comment other than, you know, we love the show or the occasional we hate the show, the most common is what's going on, why is Archer not in the opening theme? Which is true. The opening theme to Engage, the official Star Trek podcast, you get to hear a little Captain Kirk, you get to hear a little Picard. You get to hear mostly those two guys, but you get a quick how do you do from Captain Janeway, and then you get an even quicker how do you do from Captain Sisko. But you don't hear squat from Captain Archer. And to be honest, I don't like that either. And it's going to change. What I've decided to do, you know, I didn't make the opening. And, you know, the guys who did, they did a good job. And they, you know, they did it on their own free time. And I don't want to pester them too much because it took a little work to get going. And it happened all very quickly. And I think it sounds fun. I think it sounds ridiculous. You know, it's kind of over the top, but it's fun. So what we're going to do is we're going to change it. I haven't officially asked them yet, but I'm planning to ask them to change it when we have some audio from the new show, Star Trek Discovery, which is coming up in January. I figured that that would be a good opportunity. You know, we had been doing the show at that point for 6 months. That seems like a nice window of opportunity to put in a favor with the engineering team here at the Play.it organization and say, hey, maybe we can revisit the opening theme now that we have some new audio from whoever our new lead is, not the captain, whoever number one is, right? That's the new rumor that we heard is that the character is called number one, but it may not be the number one we know from the cage, or maybe it is, I don't know. So I think that's, stay tuned, hold your horses, keep your thrusters on impulse power. We'll make a change in January. And also, you know what, Enterprise, don't push it, you know? We talk about Enterprise a lot, we love you, but maybe you're not in the opening theme. It's not so bad. So the two letters of note that I wanted to bring up, I mentioned on the last show that we seem to be huge in Sweden. They love Engage, the official Star Trek podcast, in Sweden. And since then, I've gotten contacted by another two listeners from over there, which brings us to, I think, six. But I threw down the gauntlet and I said, hey, what's going on, Norway? How come nothing from you guys? And I heard back from a Norwegian listener, and what she said was fascinating. I think you'll get a kick out of this, because she is aware. I'm joking. Norway and Sweden are just, you know, they're just two countries near each other. But in my head, they have what I considered to be a, I would imagine, a fairly similar culture. I mean, I hope that's not an offensive statement to say that Norway and Sweden are neighbors, and, you know, there tends to be some overlap in what's popular in one country and the other. I mean, I am aware that Norwegian and Swedish are two different languages, but neither of them are English, and the show Star Trek is in English, so clearly it could have been translated into both. Anyway, let's hear what a woman by the name of Raja Renate Gunnarsson writes to me. Raja writes, hey, Norwegian listener reporting to thank you for yet another great episode. Blah, 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 blah. I especially love the interview you did with Connor Trinneer and Dominic Keating. So there, some more Enterprise love. Everybody loves Enterprise. Blah, 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 blah. Thank you for brightening my day. Oh boy, that was the wrong. Woo, that was the follow-up. Actually, I never read that. I'm just reading that for the first time. It's a follow-up email. Okay, I've been in conversation with Raja. She's been writing back and forth. What she did write originally, and this is lengthy, I'm not going to read the whole thing. What she basically said is that there are very few Norwegian Star Trek fans that I've hit upon something, which I didn't know. As a Norwegian woman that has spent years at mostly UK conventions, I've made a few interesting observations. Take, for example, in Norway, it's not at all normal to be a Trekkie or even just a Star Trek fan. We've got plenty of sci-fi and Star Wars, but not much for Trek. And then she goes on to say that when she goes to conventions in the UK, she'll hear a ton of Swedish. And I might hear two or three Norwegian voices, but I'll hear a ton of Swedish. Weird, though quite different, we're pretty much the same kind of country, and we share a border throughout most of the country. You'd think it would be similar. So it's kind of more normal to be a Trekkie in Sweden. And from my Swedish friends, I get the impression they have the same kind of stigma I see in the UK, too. All right. Well, I don't know much about stigma with Star Trek. In the U.S., that's kind of gone. That was my lifetime growing up. In the 80s and 90s, if you were a Star Trek fan, you were, you know, it was you had to keep that in the closet to a certain degree. So anyway, that is the big ethnographic news from the day. You can take it home. You learned something here on Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. Sweden and Norway, you know, similar cultures, share a border. In one country, Star Trek is king. In another country, it's not. So congratulations. That's the news. Now, the other big news comes from a listener that contacted me via Twitter who goes by the handle of Joe. His name is Joe Keegan, Joey Joe 77 UK. I love Twitter names. Joey Joe 77 UK did the thing that I was really hoping somebody would do, and I was kind of kidding. But in the back of my head, I'm going, oh, I hope somebody does it. Joey Joe 77 UK, you are the best. You really are. If you recall, a few weeks ago, we broadcast an interview I did with Robert Picardo, Bob, as I like to call him, from the convention. And we were goofing around, and we were talking about people dressed as the Doctor. And we were in a merch room where there was a lot of toys, right? They had and I poked over to the wall, and I said, I bet you somewhere in packaging there is the Doctor. He said, yeah, probably. And I, you know, anyway, it led to me saying, how many times do you think you've said the phrase, please state the nature of the medical emergency? And he said, oh God, it had to be, you know, he almost, you know, went white as a ghost because that phrase probably freaks him out. And he's like, hundreds, 128 times. I'm like, no, it's less than that. It's got to be, but, you know, because you did multiple takes and, you know, when you're shooting a TV or film, you know, you say a line 100 times and it's only used once and then sometimes it's cut out. So he scaled it down. I think he said 60 something. I said, listen, somebody, some listener is going to go and somehow find out how many times you said it. So I don't know what Joey Joe 77 UK's methodology is. And to a degree, so this has not been peer reviewed. So this will not hold up in a court of law. So, but nevertheless, JoeyJoe77UK states, the doctor says, please state the nature of the medical emergency 28 times. And then he goes on to say that the line was said five more times, twice by Paris, once by Seven of Nine, and twice by, as he calls it, EMH2. And I asked him if Louis Zimmerman ever said it. He said no. So there you go. Picardo 28 plus another five. Two Paris, 179, and two by EMH2. And there you go. I feel fulfilled. It sounds about right, too. Because in her head, it's a million times, but 28's still a lot, you know. And of course, he also said it in the movie, right? In one of the movies, First Contact. I'm imagining that that's bundled into that 28. Okay, cool. That's what's going on. Thanks. The mailbag was a lot of fun. Please feel free to email me at jhoffman555@gmail.com. Hit me up over Twitter at jhoffman, or you just ping me via Facebook. You could put something on the wall if you want everybody to see. If you want it to be more private, you can message me via Facebook. I read all of them. I don't do it every day, and in fact, I'm looking now. I just went to the page right now, and there's a bunch of mail that I haven't read yet. So that might lead to some cool stuff next week. But until then, we're going to speak now to Sarah Gatos. But before her, we're going to speak to Michael Dorn. We got some cool stuff coming up next week. Also, this week, the week before Labor Day, is actually a packed week. We got a special interview that we're bundling that's going to go live in a couple of days. But all of these episodes live forever in the archive, you know. I get people coming up to me and saying, I just listened to, and that was something that we recorded a month ago. So I like that. Something that happens now does not have to be specifically about the now, man. Time capsule. Relics, right? Okay, let's beam back, though, a few weeks to Las Vegas and hear what Michael Dorn has to say.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
Okay, so we are recording and we have just a moment here to chat. I could not let the convention go without speaking to arguably my favorite character in the entire franchise, the mighty Son of Moog himself, Worf, also known as Michael Dorn. He is a real person.
Yes, he is.
Beneath the makeup. Mm-hmm. And what's great is that because of the makeup, you can still, even at a Star Trek convention, as I just did with you, walk down the hall and people don't always recognize you. A few did.
Yeah, but I think they do double takes and triple takes.
Right, because they're not 100% sure.
Not 100% sure.
I think that's Dorn. I'm not 100% that's Dorn. I also see that you stole Brent Spiner's lunch.
No, I did not steal it. In fact, I asked him several times, are you sure that it's okay? And he says, no, go, take it.
Okay.
And, you know, he and I are both healthy eaters.
Yeah.
I'm a little more hardcore than he is, but he's a very healthy eater too. So
you figured if it was good enough for him, it would be okay.
Because he knows my predilection for
your regimens.
Vegan, and, yeah.
Okay, because there is a plastic shell casing here of some sort of sandwich, and it does have in marker the word Brent on it. So
yes, it's a plastic container with, well, now a 3/4 eaten vegan spring roll.
Yeah.
It's very funny. I have a dear friend who's a comedian, really great guy, and he gives me so much. And because he's very funny,
yeah,
you know, you can't help but laugh. And so we were at a restaurant that had these kind of spring rolls,
uh-huh.
And I said, hey, look, you know, you got to try this, but you got to use the sauce or else you won't like it. So he did the sauce and he ate it and he was chewing it. You know, he says, it's like eating a party favor.
So you are an advocate for healthy eating and for veganism, but you still commingle with non-vegans. If a guy eats ribs, and I find that eating ribs is the most carnivorous thing you can do because it's you could actually see the bone right there. Mm. You're not going to dismiss that person. You're going to let them do their thing. But
And I don't. I'm not a you know one of those people. In fact, I don't. A lot of comedians, a lot of people who talk about it say that vegans are very pushy and all that. And I don't know any pushy vegans. Mm. We basically go, we eat what we eat. If people ask us about our lifestyle, we'll say, well, this is the thing. And they'll say, well, what about that? And you say, well, this is this. And we don't go into a restaurant and start shooting people.
It's a stereotype. It's like people have stereotypes against Star Trek fans. They think they're one way, and maybe one or two of them are, but most of them are not. No. I just saw you a moment ago in the room where you were signing things and interacting with fans, and I couldn't quite hear exactly what the woman said, but woman said, it was like, I was having a really, really bad day yesterday, and the fact that you were on the panel turned my day around. Mm-hmm. That's got to be incredibly gratifying for you. I mean,
I don't know why. I kind of asked her why, but she didn't. She said, that's been, So obviously it was a personal thing, but those type of things happen occasionally, not all the time, but occasionally.
Yeah.
You know, they look at us and kind of go, God, it's really, interesting. Or if you happen to be a nice guy to them, it's really important. Yeah.
Fans imprint themselves on the characters, and they, we know that the character and the actor are two different people, but it's always nice to an actor, for someone who did a show for, you did more than 7 years. You did it longer than anybody for
11 years,
11 years altogether. You can't do that character day by day and completely fake it. No. A lot of warf has to come from you. Mm-hmm. I mean, so when somebody really loves warf, clearly they're going to want to come up to you and give you a hug, even if you don't want to be hugged at the moment. So we're talking a little bit about people's misunderstanding of things. What are some things about the Klingon culture that you think people may not understand? Few people would understand the richness of Klingon culture more than you, who had to live with it for 11 seasons of television.
Well, it's a good question, but it's a question that doesn't really have a particular answer because it has a very kind of strange answer because the richness of the culture is something that kind of developed over the years.
Yeah.
There wasn't that richness of a culture. There was a little bit in Next Generation, but then it really blossomed in Deep Space Nine. And so it became like a progression of, we discovered this, we discovered that, we discovered that, we discovered that, as an audience. And as actors, we're discovering that too with the audience because we don't, we hardly know what the writers are going to write.
Sure, sure.
So, but I think that the culture began with the original. It took on a different, we found out more about it in The Next Generation, and then we really found out about it quite a bit in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
But there's not really anything that is hidden about the culture. The only thing that I would say that's one of the things that was not shown or not discussed or not, written about is when in Next Generation we wanted to change the culture so it was more Japanese samurai, Asian influence, the kind of, yin and yang.
Yeah.
And all these things, because up until that point, up until the first season of Next Generation, all the Klingons were just these wild, out of control, death dealing.
Right, they were just baddies, yeah.
But and they were baddies. They were one dimensional baddies.
Right, right, right.
And so, from the first season of Next Generation, they were my character was screaming and yelling and kind of out of control, but in his fights and in his sort of those conflicts, he's out of control. His double-handed fist is all they ever did. And I just said, it doesn't, can I do this to Gene Roddenberry?
Yeah.
And he said, sure, just make the character. So I got together with a special effects supervisor, Dan Curry, who is a martial arts expert. And we created all this sort of Klingon martial arts. And that's the only thing that is really people don't know is that that's where all that stuff came from.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that the writers were great, and they took off on that.
They played from that. They saw what you were doing totally, and said, totally. Oh, that's we're going to follow that lead.
Let's go with
it.
That, yeah. You know. And they created, I mean, I had nothing to do with the creation of the universe that they did. I mean, it was beautiful what they did.
Yeah.
Really beautiful.
It's funny that you mentioned, and certainly there are one-to-one comparisons with Japanese culture, but just mm-hmm. this morning, when I was hosting the One Trek Mind panel where we do fan interaction, and we were talking about the Klingons, there was a person who came up who was Middle Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the Klingons meant a lot to him because he saw Middle Eastern representation mm-hmm. in the culture, which, you know, I had never really dwelt on it like that, but clearly he saw that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what's great is that it is, you can project things onto it and you know, bounces back what may resonate with you more
exactly.
than other things.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, for me, the Klingons were the Russians.
In the original series?
Yeah.
Sure.
I thought they were the Russians in this series, too, in our series, because they, although, I mean, I'm just saying they represented
Soviet
the Russians.
Union. Yeah, because the collapse of the, I got to remember, 87 was when the first
episode
and was.
And it was, it was, you know, of course, you know, our show didn't precipitate the collapse of, you know.
It certainly did, and Star Trek VI did too.
But it was basically the idea that cultures cannot continue, and I think that for me it was the Russian, you know, it represented the Russian culture.
Mm-hmm.
But then it became, because of, you know, the internet and, you know, the information world, that we see that it really was about a lot of cultures.
Yeah.
It really was a lot of superpowers and a lot of all this stuff that's, it's not just the Russians. And so I think that's why when you put a show out there like this, you know, you're not going towards any particular, you know, race, or you're not trying any particular society. You're just saying this is what's happening in our culture, and people will draw all that stuff from it.
In your own head, do you differentiate between your work on Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and the films even that you were in, or is it just one thing to you?
It was one thing.
Yeah.
It was one thing.
With just
I
different,
don't.
Some days you were playing off of Nana Visitor, and some days you're playing off of Patrick Stewart, and that's
well. The thing is that, you know, as an actor, you're loving your work because they're, you know, I'm Deep Space Nine, more than Next Generation, had a whole cast of fabulous actors.
Yeah,
you know, not and I'm not saying that we weren't good, but these actors were established, like
Rene
actors.
And
people, oh, yeah. And you know, Armin Shimerman and Nana was on Broadway and. You know, I mean, she was a Broadway baby, and of course Avery, and although Sadig was brand new, you know,
yeah.
I mean, these were all like sort of, you know, so it was a joy to work with them, but the character was just basically, I was playing Worf,
right.
And Worf all the way through both Next Generation, and it was just Worf dealing with these people.
Yeah.
And how he dealt with those people.
Yeah.
You know,
online, people who spend waste time at work, and they should be working, but they're online wasting time on Twitter or on Tumblr and whatnot. Worf as a meme, I mean, all of Star Trek as a meme, but Worf particularly is just not going away. When people want to shorthand email their buddy back, or if they're dealing with work on Slack or whatever, mm-hmm. pictures of Worf in, you know, in the episode when you're in the Sherwood Forest, that one comes up a lot.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just wondered how aware you are of Worf as a meme online. I mean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Before all of those things, they were, you know, naming, you know, their pets, you know, or they were doing, you know, Worf voices, you know, answering machines and stuff like that.
Sure, sure.
So now it was a natural progression.
I mean, you have a very deep voice.
Yeah.
But Worf's voice is a little deeper than your natural speaking voice.
Oh, yeah, a lot deeper.
You would do a Worf voice, basically.
Mm-hmm.
How low can you go? Did you ever do a barbershop and sing the bass line?
No, I never did. I was in a rock and roll for many years, played bass guitar and sang in rock bands for many years. But, you know, it was such a non-issue when we try to come up with what voice Worf is going to have.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the first two episodes, first two or three episodes, two, three, something like that. Anyway, my voice is like this.
Mm.
And then Gene came to me one day and said, hey, look, Michael, we got to do something about your voice. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, it's too American. And I go, oh, okay, well. And I went away for like a day or so. And then he showed up on the set one day. I said, look, I want to, you know, run these voices by you. And I did like three or four voices. And when I did the Worf voice, he goes, that's it.
No joke, really.
And so I said, okay, and that's how it happened.
Yeah, cool. Well, listen, before I let you go, real quick, a couple of weeks ago, you were in San Diego.
Yes.
And you were, you know, this whole year is a victory lap for Star Trek, 50 years. Mm-hmm. But they had a special event in Hall H, 6,500 people in that. I don't know if you were aware how many people were in there.
Oh,
but
yes, I did.
6,500 people, and it was you, and it was, they had somebody from each show.
Yeah.
So
it was Brian Fuller's moderating.
Yeah.
Shatner. Brent,
yeah,
Bakula,
yeah,
Jerry Ryan, and another producer from the show.
Yeah, and you were there in as Deep Space Nine, even though Worf, as we know, transcends all and is even in the films and whatnot. So, if you can talk a little bit about just that. I mean, you've done these conventions so many times, but to bring it outside of a Star Trek event,
sure,
because Comic-Con is a wider thing. Mm-hmm. It's really just pop culture is what it is.
Yeah.
And you're flying the flag for Star Trek. That must have been a thrill.
Well, you know, it was very interesting. I mean, on a lot of levels, because I had a chance to talk to Brian Fuller, which is great, and he talked about his vision for the show, which I think is fabulous. Really, really good.
Yeah.
Because he's going back to Star Trek tackling issues.
Yeah.
Which they can do. And on one hand, it was, you know, really good to be there and be part of it and be asked to do it, you know, which I thought was wonderful. But I got to tell you, because it is pop culture, you don't get the concentration of Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, Brent and I and Shatner both kind of looked at each other after halfway through it, kind of going, this group in here, you know, the audience, is not really about Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's pop culture.
Yeah.
So a lot of the references that we were making, a lot of the things we were talking about, really didn't land.
Right.
You know?
You're used to the crowds here in Vegas and the other Star Trek conventions.
Or even the conventions where it's sci-fi conventions.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Where the crowd goes, oh, Shatner, blah, 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 is in there, and they'll go into the hall and they want to listen to him. Or, you know, there's Next Generation, so they'll go to that hall.
Yeah.
Where that is, like you said, it's pop culture. And also something about Hall H is that if you get a pass for Hall H, you don't have to leave after the panel.
Right.
So
right.
There's a lot of people in there that just stay in there.
That's right. Because at the end of that day was the Marvel panel, which is the big deal. So people land grab. They get there at 8 a.m.
Exactly.
And they have a little restroom off to the side. And they got another guy selling nachos. And they stay in there and get no natural light.
Exactly.
Day.
And there was, because there was a bunch of people that wanted to get in there.
Yeah.
That I knew. And they couldn't get in there. They got there at 9 o'clock and forget it.
It's too late. You got to get there the night before.
Exactly.
It's a little screwy.
So I think that is about pop culture. The thing that I got out of it, like I said, was the idea. I had a chance to talk to Brian.
Yeah.
And he was very, very forthcoming about his vision as he was in the panels and stuff like that.
Yeah, he spoke really
And
well.
I think it was great. It was great.
Well, you know, he was asked point blank on a red carpet prior to San Diego. He said, hey, what about the new show? Are we going to start seeing characters that we know and love from Star Trek? And he was very upfront. He said, at first, no. Season one, no. New characters. Season two, forget the exact wording. I think it was either the word absolutely or you bet or 100%. But he said, yes, you know, season two, you're going to start seeing characters you love.
Mm-hmm.
You still have the Klingon ridges somewhere in your home.
Like I said, it's one of those things where every time that I leave Star Trek, I leave it for good.
Yeah.
You know, when Next Generation was over, I went, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
And they asked me back, and you know, the movies and all that stuff. So you got to figure the movies were over like in 2002. That was
right.
The last,
yeah, that was
our
Nemesis.
Last
yeah.
movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about, you know, a lot of years
gone by. 2002 was the last time you were Worf. Not the last time you were a Klingon in a movie, technically.
Technically, but last time I was Worf.
Last time you were Worf. You were a make-believe Klingon in Ted 2.
And so I'm always surprised in this business, and it's always been, and I've discovered a way to make it work for me internally, which is my lawyer, Ralph Weiss, who's also one of my dear friends. When we were doing negotiations, we did a lot of negotiations over the years. Mm-hmm. We had this plan or this formula, which is I tell him what I want, and he doesn't talk to me. We don't discuss it. Mm-hmm. We see each other all the time because we're flying buddies and all that type of stuff and lunches and hanging out. But we do not discuss anything that's happening until it's over. And either he says, okay, you're going to work or you're not going to work.
Oh, I see.
And so I don't get caught up in
all the
discussions and stuff like that. And so that's how I like to deal with these questions for myself, which is, you know, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, who knows? I mean, every time I think about it, I just go into this thing of like, okay, don't think about it because it just,
right.
You know, and so I just kind of let it alone.
Well, the way that you do it, it seems to me almost like an honorable Klingon way, you know, not nitty gritty, not negotiating.
You know what?
A line and you see what's going to happen.
See what's going to happen. You know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. If not, you know, life is great. You wake up every morning and you're just going, look at this. This is just fabulous. I mean, you got to think.
I mean, you're certainly very busy. You're always doing a lot of work, a lot of voiceover
and
work.
I think that the idea is that, you know, if somebody said at the very beginning of my career, oh, Michael, by the way, you're going to do 11 years on a TV show and 5 movies, and you're going to make a living at, you know, conventions for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I'd go, that's not bad. You know, and if people say, oh, it's too bad you're not in the next, I'm like, no, it's not too bad. This is, you know, this has been great. So.
Well, I mean, you can see the love of, I mean, there are always so many people dressed as Klingons and, you know, it takes a village to raise the Klingons, but the Klingon first and foremost in everyone's heart is the one that you played for 11 years.
So, I think so. I like to think a good friend of mine who happens to be Chris Pine's dad.
Oh, right.
Definitely. He and I are dear friends. And he said that I was complaining about something, which I kind of do at times. And he goes, Michael, you know, you gotta think about who you complain to sometimes, you know, because what other actor has had the opportunity to create an icon that's going to be around for
Well, Chris Pine's dad, Robert is his name, right?
Yeah.
He's a great example. He is a successful working actor. You know, he's made a career, but he has not sunk his teeth into something that people are constantly thinking about. Mm-hmm. But that's
one of the things that you have to, and I do. I mean, there are times when I'm very good about it now. Mm-hmm. Before, like 10 years ago or 15, when I was talking to him, I was a little more like, God, I really want to do this. I really, you know, but I don't do that anymore. Not at all. Once we had that discussion, I said, you know, you're right about that. I think I better keep my big yap shut.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, listen, I want to let you go back into the room because there are some fans that are waiting to greet you again, and they've got some things that maybe they would get your John Hancock on.
Sure.
So thanks again so much for coming on Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. And we'll see you in New York at the convention there, right?
New York, yeah, you bet.
We'll see you there. Okay, take care.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back to Engage.
Engage.
Official Star Trek podcast with your host Jordan Hoffman.
You are, after all, irrational.
All right, and we're back on Engage, the official Star Trek podcast, and we have a guest that's a long time in the making. Sarah Gatos is the... What is your official title?
I am now group editor of the Star Trek books at IDW Publishing and many other books as well.
Awesome. And for those that are not reading Star Trek comics right now, What's wrong with you?
Seriously.
You need to be. There have always been Star Trek comics since the very beginning, and many of these Star Trek comics were good. Mm-hmm. Many of them were not so hot.
But all of them were made with love, I'm sure.
All of them were made with love. But when IDW, which is got the license because it had been originally with Gold Key, and then it was over at Marvel, and then DC, and then Wildstorm, and blah, blah, blah. But IDW got the license in...
About 10 years ago.
About 10 years ago. And I can state unequivocally that it is the best run of Star Trek comics in the 50 years.
Thank you.
Without question.
Thank you.
It is the most... true to the show, the most consistently entertaining, and it's also going in many, many directions. That's part of what I want to talk about, are the so many things that are happening. So in the last year, and this was something that made quite a bit of news, was the hand-painted five-issue comic of taking of Harlan Ellison's original script of City of the Edge of Forever and doing that, because Harlan Ellison, very talented, great writer, was always never too keen on the ultimate compromise that ended up on screen, and had made statements about that over the years. And it was like, hey, you know what, Harlan? It's never gonna get shot, but you can make it a comic, and it's terrific. And that was a huge bestseller, right?
Yeah, it's one of our perennial bestsellers. And this week at the convention, when people come up and they want to read something new, it's so easy to sell them that. The art is beautiful by J.K. Woodward, and it's a wonderful book. I would even say for people who aren't that experienced with reading comics, it's still something that you can dive into and really enjoy.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely exploits the aspects of sequential art, as we like to say,
in
ways that are unique and extraordinary, and can get somebody into comics that doesn't normally read them. Additionally, there have been some great crossovers. There was a Doctor Who crossover. Mm-hmm. There was a Legion of Superheroes crossover.
Star Trek Green Lantern.
I was building to that
Star
the best
Trek.
One.
Don't forget Star Trek Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, that's your favorite is Planet of the Apes, right?
It's really ridiculous. So it's original series Planet of the Apes, and the writers, Scott Tipton and David Tipton, were able to find this tiny bit of time where this ridiculous, crazy, over-the-top adventure could take place, and it totally works. Like I say about crossovers, you don't want the entire book just to be about how these people are in the same place at the same time. There actually has to be a story. And this one, they knocked it out of the park with art by Rachel Stott, and that was her first book, actually.
Wow. And then, of course, there was the Green Lantern book from last year, which is now, there's going to be a second volume next year, right?
Totally.
Next year. Same writer, Mark Johnson.
Mike Johnson,
excuse me.
And same artist, Angel Hernandez. So basically, the fan response to it was off the hook. And I think what it did is it brought some DC fans over that maybe didn't really know the Star Trek comics world. And then the way that Mike set it up, he basically set up this integrated world where now there are lanterns in Starfleet.
Yeah.
So where are we going to go with that? You'll have to wait and see.
Hal Jordan, and that one was in the Kelvin timeline. So Hal Jordan and Chris Pine, Kirk, get along very well. And,
not at first.
Well, I mean, I just meant visually.
Yes,
just meant as a visual representation. And then from Planet of the Apes, it was prime timeline, so it was Shatner, Kirk, and Charlton Heston.
Yep.
Can't beat that.
And I think it might have been one of the first Charlton Heston-approved books, so we got approval from his estate to use his likeness.
Is that right?
Oh, really, and his estate was really stoked on it, so it was a really good experience.
Yeah. And before we get to sort of the main comic, we're still talking about sort of the I guess we want to call them like the side projects in a way.
Yes.
There also is the comics legend, John Byrne. I mean, to throw the word legend around, John Byrne has been working in comics for forever. And, you know, Fantastic Four, Superman. I mean, really made the Superman we love is him. And is a huge Star Trek fan.
Yeah, massive.
And he dipped his toe into Trek with IDW with a lot of... miniseries. There was one that was called Star Trek Crew, and it was all about Number One from the Cage that Majel Barrett played, and it was about her adventures through the Federation and how she rose in the ranks. There was a couple of miniseries about the Romulans.
Yeah,
it started as, correct me if I'm wrong, it was the story of the guy who was in Balance of Terror. And it was his backstory, and then his story back on Romulus. Like, it was his,
right,
you know, the guy who sent him on the mission, what happened after he ran afoul of Kirk. And that lasted longer than expected, right?
Right, right. So basically, my boss, Chris Ryle, edited these books before I got to the company. And I think what happened was they just had a relationship from before. And he kind of talked him into just playing around with it and doing some samples. And then they did a one-shot. And then he was like, you know, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Let me do another one. And then another one. And then another one. So now we have this beautiful, you know, giant 500-page collection of the traditional line art comics that Mr. Byrne has done for us, in addition to the photo novels.
Yeah. Well, I was getting to that. So back in the day, back in the 60s, and well, it was in the 70s when it started, there was a thing, and it was a little bit of a financial boondoggle. It didn't work out so well, but there were these photo novels. Think of a time when there was no VCRs, mm-hmm. so you could not watch Star Trek on demand, something that is anathema to us now.
I don't understand.
In the age of Netflix and, more importantly, CBS All Access, mm-hmm. we have access to all Star Trek at all times. But, and in an earlier episode of Engage, when I spoke with my colleague Bilge Ebire, who grew up in Turkey, his first interaction with Star Trek was with a photo novel.
Oh,
and
that's
he didn't
cool.
he didn't even read English at the time.
No.
So cool. He figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
What it was basically screenshots, we would say mm-hmm. today, with text. So John Byrne, who loved these before, said, I want to play around with this, but in a new way. So what he's done, and correct me if I'm wrong, because mm-hmm. it's very unique and a little strange at first, he's taken screenshots of the show, TOS exclusively,
mm-hmm.
and he's manipulating them in Photoshop. So he's not yep. drawing, he's not illustrating.
That's correct.
And then creating new text based on these images.
Yep, entirely new stories.
And they're from the whole, so it's like reaction shots. If it's like, I want a reaction shot of Chekhov looking shocked, he's like, oh, because he's such a Star Trek fan. He's like, oh, I know that there's a shot from Spectre and the Gun, Spectre of the Gun, where Chekhov is making a face. I want to use that face. So he'll pluck it from that.
And he might use the eyes from one and the mouth from another. And, you know, he might stick that head on a different body and then have to change the color of the shirt or the uniform. So yeah, that's a level of dedication that I think we all have to bow down to. But he says it's the most fun he's had maybe ever. So he's really enjoying it. And the thing that I love is that people have been coming up to our table here at the convention, and they're not necessarily comic fans, but they love this. So it's kind of like, you know, like the first one free kind of drug pusher thing, where it's like, if you like this, try all these other comics.
Yeah.
So
and they're called
New Visions.
The New Visions. And they must be incredibly time consuming to do.
He was just saying today that a page takes him just about a day, which for him is how long a page of art would take him.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
which
then
is
I guess it's not so bad.
I think he's just crazy fast.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, how is he even getting these? Like, what's his secrets? Or do we not know?
I don't know if he has DVDs that he can rip from, if they're high res enough. You know, like sometimes when I'm looking for reference, there's a million sites out there that do high quality screen caps.
Trekcore.
Yeah.
Big ups to Trekcore. We love Trekcore.
So that's really helpful.
Yeah. Wow. It's incredible. Okay. Cool. So now that we've talked about the myriad of ancillary Trek comics that are happening with IDW, there's also the main event.
Yes.
Which is it's about to have the 60th issue mm-hmm. of the ongoing series. The 60th, which is also going to be, I don't want to say the end, but you're going to cap it at 60
the last
and start it. And it's basically Kelvin Timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And it started out as just playing around with the characters we love from the movies. And there was some prequel stuff. We want the book that was called Countdown that was really nifty. But it has become a great interplay with the characters as we know them in the Kelvin films, so much so that, if I'm not mistaken, Keenzer, the lovable little green dude that Deep Roy plays, he got his name Keenzer in the comics.
The wee bastard, is that what he's called?
Yeah, the wee bastard.
Yes.
But he got his name Keenzer from the comics, and then they ended up in the third movie. They're calling him Keenzer all day long.
Yeah, and so much Keenzer in the third movie. I was so happy. So happy.
There is an issue where it's Keenzer's backstory.
Yes.
And you get to, if you want to know more about him.
And I do.
He has his own comic. I forget the number. Let's just, I think it's...
It's fairly early in the run. I would say it's before issue 20.
Okay, so it's before issue. So let's just say issue 17 or so, and you can look it up. There's also other cool characters that got backstory, like Cupcake.
Cupcake
has a backstory issue also.
And, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name, 0781?
Yes, no, 0718.
Thank you.
Science Officer 0718, mm-hmm. who is the, and I talked to Simon Pegg about this on the show, mm-hmm. and I said, Simon, I love the new movie, but why wasn't Science Officer 0718? He's like, we wanted to put him in there, but it was totally a practical issue because the dude who played him mm-hmm. lived in L.A., and mm-hmm. they were shooting in Canada, and you would think that they could make that happen.
Yeah,
but,
he was so great. We even have we try and keep him in quite a bit.
And he talks with this cyborg voice.
And we even have him, we did a recent kind of mirror JJ track, and we have him in there, but he has red eyes instead of blue. And
this is issues 59 and 60, right?
That is earlier than 59 and 60. Okay. I'm completely blanking on which issues those were, but... yes, that one was a lot of fun. Issues 59 and 60 are our fun. It's a way to get the OST and JJ crew together with a little bit of a spin, and I don't want to give too much of it away, but basically, you know, some timey-wimey stuff happens. and what's happening is they're transferring bodies. Ooh. So, you know, I might be sitting on the bridge of the Stretch on the Enterprise, I wish, in the Kelvin timeline, and I see Chris Pine, but inside his mind is Shatner.
Oh.
And that just keeps happening, and they can't figure out why.
And they're aware, so they become aware of this other timeline. That's heavy stuff, man. I love it. The thing with Science Officer 0718, I believe he was the consciousness of the computer.
Yes.
At one point, and then he formed into that muscular ball.
Yeah, so we basically did the origin of that character in the comic, which was a lot of fun.
Right.
So, and that's the kind of things that we can do in comics, you know, obviously.
Flesh out. And there was another character in Star Trek Into Darkness who was the kind of the punky girl with the anime haircut named Zhara, right? Zhara or Zhara?
Zhara,
excuse me. And Zhara is kind of like a Lieutenant Yar type. She's like a badass, feisty, very... And when they go on away missions, she's like ready to fight.
Oh, yeah.
And Kirk is like, Zara, take it easy.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Because I kind of love that upstairs, downstairs stuff of like, I want to know about the guy who's in the background a lot. Like,
oh, yeah.
I love the heroes, but I always, when I watch Trek, I was always like, I could be that person in the back, like cleaning the crew. I don't know.
You must love the TNG episode, The Lower Decks.
Yes, then, right? That kind of stuff.
That is probably. Yeah.
But that's the kind of stuff you can do in comics that makes it so wonderful that you can't do on a 2-hour movie or even an hour TV show. These weird, quirky deep dives.
Yeah, to get a whole backstory on Keenzer, who everybody loves, and other things about, you know, Kirk, Spock, Bones relationship and Spock's relationship with Uhura and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So there are the point is there are 60 issues, and there are of course packaged into lovely trade paperbacks and even special edition hardcover.
And available digitally as well.
Yeah, you can put it on your iPad. So get off your rear ends and start buying some IDW comics. And so let's talk about the future, though.
Mm-hmm.
We left off also Starfleet Academy, which is another short
Starfleet,
one that you did.
Starfleet, one very near and dear to my heart.
Five issues, right?
Five or six. Yeah. So.
And you mentioned in the panel that it was like a young adult, and it says it's good for 8-year-olds. And I'm like, I thought it was for me.
I love young adult or all ages material.
Yeah.
So I wanted something that people could share with their kids or their nieces or nephews, or if they're librarians, you know, if they love Trek, but maybe these kids are not as familiar. This is kind of a way in because I always wanted to go to Starfleet. And so it's kind of the backstory of when Kirk and Uhura were still in Starfleet immediately before the 2009 film. But then it also introduces a completely new crew of cadets. And it's basically the stories of heroes, but they're not quite there yet. They're still working some stuff out. They're still figuring out how to operate in this world. And that went on for one trade, but we're going to bring them back in lots of different ways.
It's really, and it's very funny. There's this alien named Shiv. Where is Shiv from again? He's blue and has lots of arms and...
Shiv? Is Shiv the Andorian?
No, yeah, that's right. Shiv. Who was the guy who just says...
Vel.
Vel, I'm so embarrassed.
Vel is the alien whose name starts with an M that I cannot pronounce.
Okay, yeah.
Someone out there will know what I'm talking
about. But Vel is a guy who, like, if he's dancing, he will say, I am dancing.
Yes, you know? He just kind of is only able to emote what he's doing. No, he was great. And that was written by Mike Johnson and Ryan Parrott with art by Derek Charm. And Derek, who you may know from being in the traveling 50th anniversary gallery show, does a wonderful kind of animated style.
Yeah.
So it's something that's really different, but I like to be able to put books out there that are good for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, maybe if you're into Klingons, you might pick up Manifest Destiny, which was our recent miniseries. If you're into older stuff, we've got like Gold Key collections that are just beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the nice thing
and
about.
And you did a couple, maybe like 2 years ago, you did an issue where it was gender switch.
Yep.
You had Jane T. Kirk.
Jane Kirk. I loved her. Yeah. I'd love to bring her back. But then Uhuru as well, because you got to do a full gender swap.
It was great.
Yeah.
And so Starfleet Academy is really fun, and the lead is great. She's a young, she's Vulcan, but she's but it's Kelvin universe, so she's one of the last remaining Vulcans. Yep. So she feels like an outsider. So I think it's very good for kids who are, you know, maybe feel like, oh, you know, that awkward teen who doesn't quite fit in is
absolutely,
like, you know, read this comic book and it will make you feel better.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's really nifty. So, but what I love about you is that I think you're like Admiral Nechayev of the comics is what you are.
Thank you.
Because you've got like 17 different flagships flying at once and you're kind of like.
Yes. This is why I drink. Yeah. So in addition to all this, so we're rebooting the ongoing Star Trek. Well, maybe reboot is not the right word because everybody hates a reboot. You know, everything is still intact in the timeline. We're not redoing anything. What we're doing is starting over with a new number one called Star Trek Boldly Go. And it was just a nice time to refresh the line. And that'll start in October with Mike Johnson and Tony Chastain, which is our Uber team on the ongoing Star Trek book, and that'll be a monthly ongoing book as well.
And I asked you before, there will be some Jayla in this.
Yes.
Can you confirm and deny? All right, there is going to be some
Jayla. I can confirm, and hopefully more as things go on.
Yeah. Have you decided what you're going to be doing with Chekhov?
He is in issue number one. We're not quite sure how to handle it, quite frankly, and we're just going to kind of take some time.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a horrible tragedy. We want to make sure that we're being sensitive, but at the same time, leaving him out just felt wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll play it by ear.
Okay. No, I think it's a good. I mean, the character is the character.
Yeah.
You know, but it is Anton Yelchin's likeness. So
yes.
Well, I mean, very recently in the ongoing run, I think it was 55 through 58, sort of dealt in a way with the death of Leonard Nimoy.
Exactly.
Because it was Prime Universe Spock, and it was his. I don't want to spoil it, but I don't even want to say final mission, but it was like, what is Spock doing now that he's retired?
Yeah.
Let's put it that
way. Yeah. How is he helping New Vulcan?
Yeah.
And it was kind of a nice way. Mike Johnson framed it in such a lovely way that he was able to reflect on his adventures.
Sobbing on the subway as I read it, just sobbing.
He really went for it. He really went for the jugular. And then Tony did these beautiful pages, and it's just amazing. I'm incredibly proud of the work we're doing on that book. So.
Cool. So issue 60 then transforms into Boldly Go 1.
Yes.
Then there's also, because at the panel yesterday, somebody said, excuse me, we have some great stuff with the TOS characters and the Kelvin characters, but there's so much Star Trek. When are we going to see those guys again? And you said, I have the answer. It's something called Star Trek Waypoint.
Yes, yes.
Which are a bunch of one-shots, or they're a bunch of...
So Waypoint is an anthology book, and it is my answer to why isn't there a Voyager ongoing and a TNG ongoing. Like, frankly, our poor comic retailers just don't have enough space to do that. So I wanted to find a way to kind of play around with it. And so Waypoint is a book that comes out every other month, and each issue will have at least two... stories from all the different treks except for Kelvin, because we're well represented with Kelvin. So issue number one has a TNG story starring Captain Geordi and Data.
What?
Yes. So these are a little bit, I wouldn't say out of canon, but we're kind of playing around with things a little bit more.
Right.
Going a little bit wild. And then it has a beautiful, and that one's by Donny Cates and Mac Chatter, and then a beautiful TOS story starring Uhura by Sandra Lanz.
Okay.
And issue number two, we just announced, has a Gold Key. I mean, we're going deep here. Flaming Nacelles, the whole nine yards by Dayton Ward and Kevin Dillmore.
Oh, I didn't know it was them. Mm-hmm. That's the best. Those guys would go bananas for that.
They're completely going bananas with art by Gordon Purcell. And they're really leaning hard into it and having a lot of fun.
So for people who are listening that may not know what you mean by Gold Key, Gold Key was the first license to get Star Trek comics, and they were doing it. In some cases, were they not working on them before the shows even aired?
They, well, especially the artists were in Italy and had never seen the show. And of course, you know, pre-internet, you can't just search ref.
Right.
So they made a valiant attempt.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of incredibly incorrect things. Like, I think issue number one, the final solution is that Spock decides to basically obliterate an entire planet and kill all the beings on there.
It's, like, it's not Star Trek. It's some other thing that vaguely resembles Star Trek, but
it's still so fun. And it does quickly catch up. It does quickly catch up in terms of making sense and being a lot more on brand. But it's a lot of fun. But I love that CBS allows us to do a funny 10-page Gold Key story.
Yeah. That's the power of John Van Sitters, right?
And Risa Kessler, yes.
They get it, and they know that fans will know what's going on with this and have a good time and not get confused.
Yeah. So it is a nice way to, in the 50th year, to celebrate, you know, the 50 years of Star Trek comics that have come before, too, because they have literally been around since day one.
Right. So cool. So coming out, we got Waypoint, we got Boldly Go, we got more of John Byrne's New Visions, we got Green Lantern 2, and you mentioned on the panel that likely there will be another crossover with another well-beloved franchise. The ink is not dry on the contract. Yes. We're still keeping our fingers crossed.
There's a lot of really exciting stuff coming up in 2017. It is just such a good time to be a Trek fan right now, and we're definitely pushing that in the world of comics as well.
Yeah, and more Starfleet Academy also.
We'll make that happen. Okay. You may see them in an upcoming comic.
Okay, cool. So let me ask you, as the admiral of Star Trek comics, when you come to conventions and when you just, you know, open your inbox and people, what are some of the unexpected reactions you've been getting from readers?
I don't know about unexpected. What I do love is how incredibly happy and grateful and complimentary people are here. For folks that have been to other comic book conventions, things can get a little crazy. It's 150,000 people. And at Star Trek conventions, people come up and they thank you for all the hard work you're doing, and they thank you for being on panels, and they tell you how much they love the books. And that feels incredibly good and makes all the hard work worth it.
Well, I mean, it when you say hard work, I mean, it's very, to do your job and to do, and your colleagues, this is not 9-to-5 stuff. This is hard.
Right. This is monthly comics. Monthly comics they're very, very hard. And, you know, I'm there trying to keep people in line, but it's the artists and the writers that really, especially the artists, they're expected to do 20 pages a month, and there's only 30 days in a month. So, yes, that is why they drink as well.
Putting out a lot of fires. And although these lines, the comics do sell well, I mean, if they wouldn't, there wouldn't be so many Star Trek lines. It's not the new Batman. It's not the new Amazing Spider-Man.
No.
And the price point is modest. Nobody's becoming a millionaire making Star Trek comics.
Absolutely not. But our numbers are rock solid, which I think reflects the dedication of these fans, which we really appreciate. But for especially the amount of time that people put into these things, It's a challenge, but we love what we do.
Yeah, so cool. So if you've been on the fence, get on it. And if you and you can get them on if they're a little bit older, you can download them on Comixology, whatever, and it's less expensive. There's even an IDW app.
Mm-hmm. And also there's a website. I think it's just called ComicShopLocator.com.
Yeah.
That can connect you with the retailer, and many of these you can find on Amazon and stuff like that.
And if your local comic shop doesn't carry it,
they can order it for you.
Yeah, they'll order for you and yell at them and say, what the heck, man?
Yeah,
this is so much
better
than the usual garbage. It's really good. And you don't just do Star Trek. You have a whole other...
I do a lot of
stuff. What are some of the other lines that you do?
Currently, I edit a Disney line, a Powerpuff book, and new job title has me editing Transformers and Gem and some other Hasbro properties. So I'm a busy lady.
Gem, we're the misfits.
Yeah.
Transformers comics, huh?
Yep.
I don't know.
It's very different. It's very different.
I don't know, man. I can't get into Transformers. When I was a little kid, I watched the show because it was what was on.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a He-Man kind of guy.
I was also into He-Man. Yeah. For me, it's the lore is so deep, and, yeah. and specifically in another testament to IDW, the IDW Transformers world is just incredibly deep and detailed.
Yeah. And there are so a lot of crossovers great. With G.I. Joe on, mm-hmm. on there also, right? Mm-hmm. All right.
So get ready for the inevitable Star Trek Transformers crossover, what? Right?
What? Oh, my God.
Having the Enterprise transform into a robot? Come on,
no.
right?
No. Are you breaking news, or are you just teasing
us? I am not breaking
us?
News.
Oh, my
this
God.
This is something that I will make happen at some point.
What would happen? So I guess Optimus Prime and Captain Kirk would have to like take a walk around the block and talk about
it. It would be
stuff.
A very odd walk when you consider this size
Prime
difference.
Would Optimus Prime would he want to hang out with Spock? No, he's a leader and Kirk is
yeah.
a leader. So
yeah.
Optimus Prime, who would be the guy hanging
oh,
out
geez.
With Spock? Is it Soundwave? No, Soundwave is evil.
Yeah, Soundwave
I don't know
evil.
As much about the Transformers as I should.
Soundwave is cool though.
Who's the second in command? Well Scotty and Bumblebee would be
yeah.
Tells.
Scotty and Bumblebee, that makes more sense to me. But I don't know if there is a Spock equivalent. Some Transformers fan is like, there's 10, and I just don't know them. But
who is the second in command? And then the bad guys, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, that Megatron, Megacon.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Interesting. See, the possibilities are endless with
oh,
crossovers.
My God, it's exciting. Well, listen, Sarah, I want to thank you again for the hard work you do and for coming on the show. And we are planning to also speak to some of the art of J.K., and I have been exchanging emails. We're going to get him on
good.
Because he is the guy making some really beautiful stuff with you guys.
Good.
And also
get Mike on there.
Yeah, Mike is a hoot. I met him last year, and I said to him, like an obnoxious reader, I'm like, rah, 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 rah. So he, you know, the Star Trek Green Lantern book was already done, but I'm like, if you ever do number two, I think a Gorn should hang out with Issamot Cole. He's a lizard man, and he lives on Thanagar.
Need to remind him of
oh,
this.
I've like I've tweeted him that five times, and he's like, cool, man, thanks. And he's like, shut up already. But if you know Issamot Cole, he was great. He was, you know, he survived the Ron Thanagar War, and he's a virtuous member of the Green Lantern Corps.
We'll get him and Chip in there.
Yeah, Chip could hang out with Keenzer.
Yes.
And Mogo could mm-hmm. hang out with...
Mogo's the world?
Yeah, Mogo would hang out with Trelane's parents,
I think
guess.
We had Mogo in issue number one.
Yeah, Mogo yeah. was in there.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And Aresia could hang out with Jayla.
The
Jayla,
possibilities
Jayla could
endless.
Be...
I love Jayla, so Aresia's we'll just put
sister.
In Jayla and everything at this
yeah,
point.
I really hope that we get to see a lot more Jayla. She likes the booms and the shoutings,
yes.
and we like her. So yes. Jayla has been a great new addition to Star Trek. So cool. All right, well, thanks again, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for listening, everybody, to another episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Hoffman. Feel free to tweet at me at @jhoffman. Contact me via other methods. Send a raven. Do what you got to do. And we will speak to you again next time. Live long and prosper.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.